Thanks for listening to Access Utah. My guest today is Ibo Patel. He joins us from Chicago. That's where the Interfaith Youth Corps is based. This is an organization founded by Ibo Patel to counter the problem of religious intolerance and violence. The organization trains students to bridge the faith divide through interfaith cooperation. Ibo Patel was named by U.S. News and World Report as one of America's best leaders of 2009. He's author of several books, including Acts of Faith, The Story of an American Muslim in the Struggle for the Soul of a Generation. The latest book is Sacred Ground, Pluralism, Prejudice, and the Promise of America. Ibo Patel is coming to Utah. There are several events, including a convocation address. That's on Thursday, September 4th. It's next week in the Kent Concert Hall in the USU campus, 7 p.m. That's free and open to the public. There'll be a book signing of Sacred Ground following. Books will be available at the venue. At a convocation is a kicking off event for the USU Better Together campaign. It's organized by members of the USU Interfaith Initiative. And if you're interested in joining that initiative, you can email them at interfaith@usu.edu. They're also on Facebook and Twitter as USU Interfaith Initiative. Ibo Patel, some of your writings, you made a very stark contrast. This was very effective in my mind, in any case, as you introduce the idea of religious pluralism and the extreme need for that. You compared and contrasted a couple of young people, or several young people, Eric Rudolph, on the one hand, and middle schoolers, and I believe it's in West Virginia, on the other hand. I wonder if you'd take us through that. Eric Rudolph, of course, was the bomber at the Olympics in Atlanta. He also bombed a women's clinic. Was raised in an extreme Christian tradition, white supremacist, and that's as compared and contrasted to these middle schoolers who embraced the history of the Holocaust.
Right. So this is a story that I tell at the beginning of my first book, Acts of Faith, and it's meant to introduce an important theme that we focus on here at Interfaith Youth Corps, which is that young people are frequently both the foot soldiers of religious extremism, and you can read about this in the newspaper any day of the week, unfortunately, especially news around the world, that the people who are unfortunately killing other people to the soundtrack of prayer are generally in their teens and 20s. And that's a deep sadness, I think, that energy has been twisted and channeled in a horribly destructive way. On the other hand, so many of the people that we collectively admire most were young when they began their movements, including their interfaith movements. And so Mahatma Gandhi, the great Hindu leader from India, was in his early 20s when he began his movement against the racist pass laws in South Africa in the early 20th century. Martin Luther King Jr. was only 26 years old when he led the Montgomery bus boycott. And that's the reason that we focus on young people and college campuses at Interfaith Youth Corps, because we believe that young people can be the people who make religion a bridge of cooperation, just as they have over history. But we're well aware that other people are seeking to twist young people in the exact opposite direction and have those young people make religion a bomb of destruction. It's one of the reasons that folks like Allison Fife, right there at the USU campus, a senior at USU and a leader in the Better Together movement there, inspired me so much. She came to our Interfaith Leadership Institute here in Chicago, where she met 150 other students like her from across the country who were going back to their campuses to lead movements that bring young people who orient around religion differently together to focus on serving others and learning from one another. And it's people like Professor Glass Coffin, a professor there at USU who's been our key link to the campus and to the movement there, who inspire students like Allison to do their work. So we think college campuses are an ideal place to do this work, precisely because there are students like Allison and professors like Bonnie Glass Coffin on those campuses.
What's the ideal then? What are we striving for? Is it religious pluralism? It's learning about other faiths, associating, service?
Great question. So we call the ideal that we're striving for pluralism, but we have a very particular definition of it, and I'll tell you what that means. We think pluralism has three parts: respect for identity, positive relationships between people from different backgrounds and different identities, and a commitment to the common good. So just to be very clear, we do not believe pluralism means believing in every religion or accepting as true other people's religions. We're very clear here on our staff at Interfaith Youth Corps that folks who are Buddhist and folks who are Hindu are very different. People who are Christian and people who are Muslim believe in very different things. People with commitments to the LDS tradition and people with commitments to the Jain tradition, those are different traditions. So respect for identity is not acceptance of every truth or other people's truths. It's simply a recognition that other people have a right to their religion. They have a right to interpret it as they see fit, and they have a right to express that interpretation in the form of preaching, in the form of building organizations, et cetera, et cetera. And we ought to have a sense of respect for that. So although I am not LDS, I have deep admiration and respect for the LDS tradition, in large part because I have met so many wonderful LDS people. That's what we mean by respect for identity, not acceptance of other truths, not believing in all religions, simply the recognition that other people have a right to their interpretation of their religion, a right to express that, and that I ought to have some appreciation of dimensions of that tradition that I admire. The second part is relationships, so that we should have positive relationships with each other. We should have positive relationships based on the things that we have in common, for example, like service. And we should be able to have a positive and civil conversations about things that are different. And when you're dealing with different religions, there are, of course, both commonalities and differences. We can come together on the commonalities. We can talk politely and civilly about the differences. And then finally, we ought to actually do things together, do things that benefit the rest of the country and the world together. And I think the LDS community is a model of this. The LDS community's efforts in service are so important to American civil society and indeed global civil society. And I'd love to see more religious communities cooperating together in service projects like disaster relief or Habitat for Humanity builds or environmental cleanups, etc. And those are the kinds of things that serve the common good.
What are the barriers? I could think of one, which would be, and Professor Glass-Coffner at USU cites a Pew Research Center survey about religious literacy, so that in that survey, less than half of the questions about major world religions were answered correctly. Is that a barrier and a starting point? Just learning about each other?
Sure. I think that the lack of what we call appreciative knowledge about other religions is an important barrier to building religious pluralism. But honestly, I think the single biggest barrier is simply not making this a high enough priority. And I think that in the 21st century, it ought to be one of the highest priorities in our country and in the world. Societies around the world, and certainly the United States, are getting increasingly religiously diverse. They're also getting increasingly mobile, which means that it's simply standard operating procedure that either you or your kids or your grandkids are going to be frequently interacting with people who have different religious identities. Making sure that interaction is positive, is constructive, builds pluralism rather than creates discord, I think is important for social cohesion. But it's also a sacred value. One of the things that I learned from my close Mormon friend in high school was the LDS tradition puts an emphasis on positive relations with others. It's almost considered holy, and that's also the case in Islam. And so we think that, in a way, the greatest barrier to the absence of religious pluralism is not enough people saying, this is a really high priority, and I'm going to commit to this. And again, that's one of the reasons I'm so excited to come out to Utah State University, because people like Bonnie and Allison have advanced this on this campus, and then the administrative leaders of that campus, President Albrecht and others, have decided we're going to make this a priority. And I think that that's really inspiring.
If you just joined us, we're talking with Eboo Patel. He is the founder and president of Interfaith Youth Corps. which trains students to bridge the faith divide through interfaith cooperation. He says interfaith interactions can be a bomb of destruction, a barrier of division, a bubble of isolation, or a bridge of cooperation. He says he's inspired to build a bridge of cooperation by his faith as a Muslim, his Indian heritage, and his American citizenship. Eboo Patel is coming to Utah for several events at Utah State University. There's a convocation address, free and open to the public. That is next week. It's Thursday, September 4th in the Kent Concert Hall on the OSU campus, 7 p.m. And there'll be a book signing of his latest book, Sacred Ground. That'll be available for sale at the venue, and it's for sale right now at USU Bookstore. And this convocation is a kicking off event for the USU Better Together campaign that's being organized by the newly organized USU Interfaith Initiative. And they have several events. Anyone interested in participating in this initiative can contact them at interfaith@usu.edu. They're also on Facebook and Twitter as USU Interfaith Initiative. And they have a roundtable. Eboo Patel will be at a roundtable Friday, September 5th in the morning, 8 to 10 a.m., Catalyzing Interfaith Leadership Best Practices. There are a few spots remaining for this. It's by invitation only for people interested in committing at least an hour a week to being part of the initiative, and they can contact USU Interfaith Initiative at interfaith@usu.edu to see if there are still spots available. Eboo Patel, you have pointed out early in the program and in your writings that reaching out to youth is certainly a priority for those who are religiously intolerant, terrorists and the like. Behind every young person who's a suicide bomber, there's somebody there who's a mentor. And so that needs to be counteracted. As you go around to campuses and the like, are you hopeful? Are young people receptive to these ideas?
Well, I'm hopeful in part because I'm an optimist by disposition, and also because the work that I do does bring me into contact with a lot of the Allison Fifes of the world and the Bonnie Glass Coffins of the world, which is to say people who are making interfaith cooperation a high priority, are either inspired young people making this one of their missions in the world, or inspired professors inspiring young people. So I feel good about the, you know, as Martin Luther King called it, the arc of justice is the arc of the universe is long but bends towards justice. So I think that will be the case when it comes to religious pluralism. I have to say that I think the LDS community is a model in terms of the responsibility that it gives young people. I mean, to make young people the folks who are most responsible for spreading your tradition in the form of missionaries is a huge responsibility. Having known several LDS folks who've done missions and have told me about how it was a significant maturation period of their lives, it made them who they are today. I just have great admiration for that.
I wonder, as I think about, you talk about the LDS community, of course, the majority religion and faith in Utah and in some areas of the West, Western United States. Is there a different or a heavier responsibility on the biggest faith community in any given area? And I'm thinking about, you know, in many areas of the world, LDS faith is minority, sometimes very small minority. In Utah, it's the majority faith.
You know, Tom, I think that's a terrific question. Thank you for asking that. I mean, I guess I do think that there is a special responsibility on that corresponds to people who are the majority. I think to myself that the vast majority of LDS folks I have known have been in the minority because I live in Chicago and, you know, I went to the University of Illinois, and then I went to graduate school in England. And one of the things that they have reported to me as being important is people around them who were in the majority, whether it was Christians or secular folks in the case of much of Europe, having an understanding of their tradition and seeking to proactively accommodate it, right? Recognizing the importance of the ward in LDS life, recognizing that LDS interaction across genders is different than the interaction of much of secular society. Not looking dismissively at it, but looking appreciatively at it, seeking to learn from it. And I think that because so many folks who are part of the LDS tradition have received that hospitality by others, and frankly have received the opposite, which is they've received hostility, that in the place in which the LDS community is the majority, to think to themselves, how would we like to be treated where we are the minority, and therefore how might we want to treat the minority religious communities here? Jews, Muslims, Catholics, really anybody else in Utah, right? I think that that's not only a positive civic value, but I think it's a my own sense is it's a theological value as well.
Before we go to another break, I'd like to bring up a very thorny issue, maybe taking some of these principles into and applying them possibly to what seems like a very intractable problem. That's the Israeli-Palestinian divide, and things just seem to be getting worse and worse. And I'm thinking specifically about the famous open letter written by Syed Kashua, who's an Arab-Palestinian living in Israel. His language is Hebrew. He was committed to trying to bridge that divide. And this is all mixed up. It's faith, it's politics, and it's long-standing, revenge cycle as well. But he famously said he can no longer live in Israel, and he's coming to the U.S. Some of these principles trying to bridge that divide. What would you say applying that to this very intractable problem?
I mean, it is a massive problem. My guess is, just based on anecdotal evidence, that more people in the last 6 weeks have defriended each other over Facebook than at any other time in the history of Facebook, because they're at each other's throats, if you will, over different views of this challenge. So, listen, that actually highlights, I think, one of the opportunities we have in the United States, which is if the worst thing that you can do is defriend somebody over Facebook, that's a whole lot better than getting a bomb dropped on you or dropping a bomb on somebody else, which is to say we live in a country that for the most part doesn't have violent religious conflict. Therefore, the way we talk to each other, the language we use, the quality of our discourse, I think is hugely important. In other words, let's make sure that the violent tensions in the Middle East or anywhere else in the world, frankly, let's make sure they're not translated to American shores. And let's actually see if the way that we can engage one another here, Hindus and Buddhists, who have a big problem in Sri Lanka with each other right now, Muslims and Jews, significant challenge in the Middle East, Catholics and Pentecostals in Brazil, right? There's various groups in various forms of tension all over the world. I think part of the ideal of America is that communities connected to those groups here are able to build positive relationships instead of being poisoned by the negative relationships, and those positive relationships can have some ameliorative, radiating quality.
We'll take another break when we come back. More with Eboo Patel. He's founder and president of Interfaith Youth Corps, which trains students to bridge the faith divide through interfaith cooperation. And he's coming to Utah for several events at Utah State University. There's a convocation address Thursday, September 4th, 7 p.m. at the Kent Concert Hall. This event is free and open to the public. The title is Building Bridges of Interfaith Cooperation. There'll be a book signing of his latest book, Sacred Ground, immediately after. Books are available at the USU bookstore and also for sale at the venue there. And this convocation is a kicking off event for the USU Better Together campaign. That's being organized by the new USU Interfaith Initiative. Their next event, by the way, sounds interesting. It's a student-led interfaith speed faithing panel, which will be held in the Taggart Student Center Auditorium at 7 o'clock on Wednesday, September 17th. Anyone interested in participating in this or other events or just getting involved with USU Interfaith Initiative can email the group. Their email is interfaith@usu.edu. They're also on Facebook and Twitter. Look for USU Interfaith Initiative. And if you're interested in getting really involved, there's a roundtable that Eboo Patel is leading. That's on Friday, September 5th from 8 to 10 a.m., titled Catalyzing Interfaith Leadership Best Practices. There are a few spots remaining to this event. It's by invitation only. And if you're interested in committing at least an hour a week to being part of the initiative, Interfaith Initiative at USU, you can contact interfaith@usu.edu. When we come back, I'm going to ask Eboo Patel to respond to the following. Some people just throw up their hands and say that the answer to faith-based intolerance and violence is to walk away from faith. They say that faith and religion itself is the problem. We'll talk about that and other things following the break.